If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Amateur Traveler, episode 883. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about merchants, miners and museums, churches, palaces and princes, as we take a road trip to 9 UNESCO World Heritage cities in Germany. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Germany. I'd like to welcome to the show Renee Hannes, who is coming to us from dreamplanexperience.com and has come to talk to us about a road trip in Germany. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here.
So what kind of itinerary are we talking about, Renee, in terms of our road trip? Where are we going?
We are taking a UNESCO World Heritage Site to 9 destinations.
Okay.
And we are starting and ending with Berlin, but we won't cover off all 9 destinations in great detail because I believe that some of those destinations you have past episodes for.
Sure.
So I'd like to highlight each of those from a perspective of that UNESCO World Heritage Site, but then go a little bit deeper on the ones that maybe your listeners have not heard about before.
Excellent. And what is your connection with Germany before we get too far in?
Yeah, so I'm half German and have been to Germany 5 times, 6 times. And I've just returned back from living in Berlin for 3 months. So had an opportunity to make a little bit of a longer trip and was there with my husband and dog and lived in Berlin and had a good chance to be able to see the city and lots of other places around it.
Excellent. I'm also half German, but that isn't going to help us for this part. So. And jump into your itinerary. You're starting us in Berlin. What are we going to do in Berlin?
Yeah, starting and ending in Berlin. Maybe I'll backtrack, Chris, in terms of when I was starting to think about all the places I wanted to see beyond Berlin. Mm-hmm. I had this long list of places that were on my to-do list. And I think like most travelers, I become very quickly overwhelmed with how many places that I wanted to see. So I thought, why not think about what are those places that are worthy of a visit? And that's where I came upon thinking about it from a UNESCO perspective. And UNESCO sites are always worthy places mm-hmm. to visit, special places to visit in terms of the history and, you know, the moments in history that they help create and shape. The architecture that usually is pretty spectacular to be able to see from nature and the landscapes that we want to protect. And then also it gives us really good insights into the culture. So after I had that long list, I went back and thought, what is close in proximity to Berlin? And that's how I was able to stumble on these 9 destinations.
Excellent. So, and we have talked about UNESCO many times on the podcast, but I'm afraid for some people, they may still be wondering what we're talking about. So this is a UN function. That's what the UN and UNESCO stands for. And it's the World Heritage Convention. And basically people vote on currently the 1,199 sites that are considered to be our collective world heritage. So sites that are significant historically, architecturally, naturally, or something like that. But you chose a subset because Germany's got 52. So you had to choose ones that made a good road trip here together.
Yeah. No, that's great background. But 52, and there were 9 that were pretty close proximity to Berlin. So thinking about a home base, and if you wanted to, or if travelers were interested in doing a similar road trip, knowing that there are 9 UNESCO sites that are pretty close to the capital city is a good reason in itself to go to that city alone.
Excellent.
So with starting in Berlin, I'll just focus on why Berlin has been named in terms of a UNESCO site, and that is with Museum Island. Mm-hmm. And Museum Island is really just that. It's an island in the middle of the Spree that features 5 world-class museums, and that's what has been designated. Just quickly, those 5 that travelers can go and see are the Altes Museum, which means the old museum, and that's all of the antiquities. The Neues Museum, which is the new museum, and that's about the archaeological collections and learning about Germany's role in archaeological discoveries. And then there's the Alte National Gallery, which is the old National Gallery, which features lots of 19th century art. The Bode Museum, which is about sculptures and more art. And then there's the Pergamon Museum. And that is usually the one that is the favorite among all travelers to go to. And that's talking about the Pergamon Altar and the Gate of Bad Babylon. And unfortunately, that museum has now closed for 14 years for renovations.
Oh, I knew it was closed. I didn't know it was closed for that long. Good grief.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Germany's famous, I think, for doing renovations on some of their pretty spectacular historical sites and taking their time with renovation. Unfortunately, if travelers are going to Berlin in hopes to see that museum, that will be closed for the next 14 years. So,
okay. So I'm not going to tell people how awesome that museum is right now.
Or it gives you a reason to go back in 15 years or 14 years plus. Yeah. But that is the UNESCO site in Berlin. And while in Berlin, there are 2 day trips that you could take to 2 other cities that are UNESCO sites. And the first one is Potsdam.
Before we get to Potsdam, yes. You mentioned the museums. We said Pergamum is great, but you can't go there. Do you have another favorite?
Do I have another favorite? Oh my gosh, that's so hard because they're so different and unique. You know, they each have their best qualities. I think the one that kind of stands out in my mind was probably the Bode Museum. I loved seeing the inside of that, just the inside of that building and seeing all the kind of artwork, and I loved how spacious it was. It was very interesting, the other ones. And those ones need a lot of time because you literally could spend a full day at some of the antiquities. And the archaeological one is fascinating to know the role that Germany
I think that's
played.
Probably my favorite outside of the Pergamum. Yeah. The bust of Nefertiti, another significant artwork there, or archaeological work there,
And it was, I didn't know too much about it actually. And so that it was really eye-opening in terms of their interest in it and the role that they had played in that. And yes, obviously to be able to see all of those artifacts that you read about in books and you've read about in history and hear about, and to be able to actually see it and see the journals from some of the archaeologists in terms of how they do that is pretty interesting.
And then you headed us over to Potsdam. Sorry for the interruption.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Shifting to Potsdam. Obviously, for those that know Potsdam, it's very elegant and regal type of city, very majestic because of the royalty roots. But it's a UNESCO site because of the Sanssouci Palace and Sanssouci Park. And this was the palace from the 18th century that was built by Frederick the Great. And of course, the park that is there, where there's other palaces, I think there's five other palaces, and the fountains and the gardens and everything that's there, you can spend the entire day just in that park to be able to cover all of that off. And, you know, Potsdam is such an interesting city because it's almost like Sanssouci Park is on its own. It stands on its own. And then you've got the old town of Potsdam when you go in there and you see the public square and the Dutch Quarter and their old town. And so it makes an interesting trip because you can almost do it a couple of times and be able to split up your time there to be able to look at the palace, take your tours there, and really learn about the quite opulence that you see within those palaces. And then also be able to stroll the ground and pretend you were once royalty from the 18th century, as they would do, and be out in nature and their hunting grounds, use it for hunting grounds as well.
Well, and the name is in French, which is odd because it's a Prussian palace, but the name means without care or without worry. And so that's where apparently Frederick the Great would have less worries when he was there.
Yeah.
And has a real kind of French palace vibe to it. You talk about pretending you're German royalty. The last time I was there was shortly after, within a year after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the tourist information was still written by the DDR. And so it talked about really how the bourgeois, and it really wasn't pro-palace, we'd have to say.
Yeah.
And when I was last in Potsdam, the Soviets were still there. There were Soviets, and they still had a presence in Potsdam with some of the soldiers there looking a little forlorn, I'd have to say. It was an odd time to be in what was only recently not East Germany at the time.
Yeah, no, that would be interesting to be able to go back and see how it has changed and how it has evolved. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I was in East Germany the year before the wall fell.
Mm.
So I was a student way back when and had an opportunity to, when we were in West Berlin, to be able to cross the border and go into East Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And have that experience. But yeah, Berlin was a fascinating city to turn and read and see how much information they have about the Cold War and the role that they had in DDR. But it has probably changed a lot because
when I was there, it was fairly run down too. It needed major renovation because it had not been taken care of. They just didn't have the money in the DDR, or if they had it, they didn't certainly want to spend it on this imperial symbol.
Yeah. Well, now it's stunning. They've done obviously the renovations and done the work in terms of restoring it and probably securing period pieces into the rooms that they want to show in terms of what it would have looked at. But it's run very efficiently, where the self-guided tours, everything is mic'd and you get to be able to go through and listen to the audio guides. So not physical guides that are in the palaces, but audio guides, which are really well done in terms of the information that they're sharing. And it's a great way for you to learn about it, self-paced, and take your time.
Well, we are talking about Germany, so you probably only need to point out when it's not run efficiently.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else you want to point out or emphasize in Potsdam?
In terms of Potsdam, just what I had mentioned was it's a nice way to visit a city and see two sides, see an old town and see the old charm of it. And the Dutch Quarter is quite charming in itself, with lots of wonderful places to sit in a cafe or go to the market. But then going to Sanssouci Palace and Park, what we had decided to do was ride bikes. And it's a great way to get through the park and be able to see it more thoroughly, because it's Bark. Difficult to walk it in a day and expect to see it all. So renting bikes is a great way to be able to go to all the palaces and stop and be able to see most things that you might not otherwise see. We saw the field of sheep who were grazing the grass, which they still do. and do naturally. So they don't have landscapers cutting the lawn. They move their sheep out throughout the park. And it was nice to be able to see that, or a surprise to be able to see that.
Excellent. Where next?
Yeah, next we are going to Wittenberg. And Wittenberg is close to Berlin, again, just a short train ride away. And it's probably best known as the place where Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door, marking the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. And so for those that are interested in that period of history, who have an interest in religious history or mm-hmm. just general history, it is an interesting place to go and see his museums, learn about through, again, the self-guided tours about how that Reformation came about, seeing actually all of the followers that he had or scholars that he had who were proponents of what he was doing in terms of their role that they had as well, and the university that's there, the castle that's there. But Wittenberg is really on the map in terms of UNESCO for that pivotal moment in history of right. Martin Luther. But it is a lovely small town as well, even if travelers are not interested in that side of history or learning more about it. It's still a lovely small town to go through and to be able to see. It's got a nice little babbling brook that runs through the middle of the town, which adds to its charm. And of course, like every small town in Germany, there's always some type of tower where you can climb mm-hmm. up the stairs and be able to see that city view. So Wittenberg has one of those, which offers a lovely view to the countryside.
And I've talked about it on the show before, but if mm-hmm. you can get to Wittenberg in June, and you happen to be near there in June, then there is the festival celebrating Luther's wedding, and it is a medieval festival. And so you're going to see a lot of people in costume, and you're going to see medieval experiences and things like that. So quite fun to be there at that time.
Oh, that would be lovely to see. And I'm sure lots of people make their way or their plans around that yep. event. Mm-hmm, for sure. All right. So we are going to leave Berlin and we're going to hit the road now. So okay. now we're jumping in the car. We're going to Quedlinburg. And Quedlinburg is, again, another UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it's because of its old town. And so Quedlinburg is just an enchanting medieval town, straight out of a fairy tale. And it dates back over 1,000 years. It's about 2.5 hours west of Berlin. And it sits in the Harz Mountains, and it's just a small town, maybe about 25,000 people. But what makes this town so special is its half-timbered houses, which I know Germany is famous for, but there mm-hmm. are over 1,300 half-timbered houses in this small okay. town. And it really is special because almost every building is a half-timbered building or house that is there. And what's not to love about seeing that? There's lots of narrow cobblestone streets, as one might expect to find. Every one of those buildings is a different color. Now, the full kaleidoscope of yellows and blues and greens and pinks and peaches and you name it, they're all different colors. And it just adds to that kind of charm when you see the timber beams and the dormer windows and the flowers everywhere. Flowers are hung from the overtop from building to building. So you're walking under these narrow laneways and there's flower balls is the only thing I can think about where all the flowers are grouped together in a big ball and hung from one building to another. So it's just one of the most charming, pretty picturesque towns in Germany for sure.
This was not at all on my radar.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration on what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code traveler to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code traveler. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now it is.
That's why I like the show.
Of course, there's the old town, but it's also declared a UNESCO site, and that's because of the St. Servetti Church and the Quedlinburg Castle. And its complex is seen as one place, and it's sitting up on the hill, and you have to climb the 200 plus steps to reach it. But once you're at the top, there's a viewing platform, and it's just absolutely stunning because you're up over top of the rooftops. And so you get to see Quedlinburg from that perspective. And then you also get to see the steeples. And there's 13 churches in Quedlinburg. And so if you can just picture the clay rooftops that you see, and then the 13 steeples of the churches that are dotted around, it's quite a very picturesque view from that viewing platform. And of course, then there's a lovely garden that you come across that's then serves as the background or the backdrop to then the Abbey, the St. Servetti Church, and then the Quedlinburg Castle. And before you reach it, there was something that I walked around the church, probably where I shouldn't be, but on the side garden there.
And you're going to get us in trouble too. Okay.
Yes, I know. There's a side garden there, and it's just a very small medicinal garden. And you see the kind of markings that they would have had and used for all the different remedies that they would have used in the Middle Ages. So it's just as it would have appeared, with little markings to show in Latin the names of the herbs and plants that are grown there and a description of what they would have been used for. So it's just a nice little quiet spot tucked away from most of the tourists. I think they missed that part. But St. Servetti and Quedlinburg Castle are under major renovations.
Okay.
And they have been now for several years, and the exterior of the Abbey, St. Servetti, is under scaffolding. You can go inside of the Abbey. It's been all restored, but it's unfortunate because the outside is all in scaffolding, so you miss out on that photo opportunity. But the castle is also under renovations, and so that is closed right now. I wasn't able to find out when the castle would be reopen, but it's still worth going up to the top, not only for the perspective of the views and seeing the gardens, but going inside the Abbey. And what that Abbey is most famous for is that it was founded by King Henry I and his widow, which was Queen Matilda. And the inside of the Abbey is just spectacular. It leaves you with no words because it is just that impressive and large. And it really features that Gothic style and the Romantic style of architecture. But the dome inside, or the Abbey inside, serves as a museum now. And so within that museum, they have a huge collection of medieval treasures, is the only way to for me to really kind of describe it. It's got lots of different things that you might see, but you learn about the history of how this was once a woman's monastery. And so probably linking back to that medicinal garden that was alongside of the church there. But some different sculptures and paintings that are there. But the highlight of the collection is a knotted carpet. And this is a knotted carpet that is considered the oldest surviving one in Europe. Not sure if that's true or not, but they do say it's from 1200 and that it is one of the oldest surviving ones that is there. But it is certainly part of the history of Quedlinburg that definitely makes it an important site as part of its UNESCO findings.
I'm seeing things in non-authoritative sites that seem to say that it will reopen at the end of 2024.
Mm.
But it's not official sites, so take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, that would be very encouraging. It didn't look like it would be, but I don't know. Who knows? The Abbey is well underway in terms of being fully probably ready, but I'm not sure about the castle. So that's good to know. So once you've had a chance to enjoy that, then you're going to take the back laneway back in down into town, and which is taking the cobblestone streets back into town. And what you want to then go and see is spend some time in the old town and the Marketplatz, which is their main public square, is probably a good starting point. And it's a pretty large square for such a small town, and it was just full of activity. So I remember visiting on a Wednesday and it was market day. And of course, market days are always a hive of activity, but it was nice in terms of seeing lots of people sitting out in the restaurants. Of course, there's lots of cafes that just pick one along any of the square. And it's a good spot because you get to be able to admire the views there. But the city hall is one of the prettiest I've seen, I would have to say. It's a Renaissance building and it's completely covered in ivy and pink flowers spilling out of its windows. But the whole building is just full with ivy and very pretty. One other thing that could get lost on the square that I would just highlight for listeners would be there's a bronze statue and it has an interesting story to it. So it's a quartet of Munzenberg musicians. So there's four people playing different musical instruments. And what this is referring to is Munzenberg was its own town. It's now part of Quedlinburg, but it sits opposite the Quedlinburg Castle. You don't view it as part of Quedlinburg when you're there in the old town. And Munzenberg was known in its Middle Ages as having lots of artists and musicians, and they would perform and earn a living for those that were at the Quedlinburg Castle and for the rest of the residents in the town. So it's a nice connection to be able to see the bronze statue playing heritage to those musicians or the role that they played in terms of Quedlinburg. And then you can also go to Munzenberg, and that what up there now is the remains of that medieval fortress at the top, a fortified wall. Again, you can see from platform view, the view of Quedlinburg, and it gives you a different perspective because now you're looking to the old town of Quedlinburg.
Okay.
I had mentioned that there were 13 churches in Quedlinburg, and probably you're not going to see all 13, but if you were to seek out a couple, I think that there's two that are in the old town that I think that are worth for travelers to seek out, and that is the Quedlinburg Cathedral. It's one of the main cathedrals that is in the old town, very large and imposing. You can't miss it. It's from the 10th century. And then there's a smaller one. It's actually one that I liked more, and that's called the Culture Church. And it's right in the center of Old Town. It's kind of smaller, but I like the intimacy of that smaller church. It was very plain, as some of the churches are in Germany, where it's white walls, or maybe sometimes it's the red brick. But it's a beautiful church. You can read some plaques and some information about the culture in Quedlinburg. So they turn these churches into places for visitors to be able to learn about the culture and the history of Quedlinburg.
Got it.
And then there's a few museums. So for those that enjoy small museums, you can learn more about timber framed houses with that museum. There's a museum called Hearts Time, and they're famous for having cuckoo clocks. So very unique museum where there's over 300 cuckoo clocks that are there. So it's an interesting one. You don't see that very often in terms of seeing that type of museums. And then there's a couple that are just paying homage to some of the people who used to be residents of Quedlinburg. So there's a past poet's house that you can go in and see his work and see what inspired his prose in terms of living in Quedlinburg. And then there's a local artist from the 20th century where you can see his painting and artwork in terms of his interpretation of being a resident and living in Quedlinburg.
Okay.
And that's what I would say is, Quedlinburg is, those are the highlights. I'd recommend you spend two nights in Quedlinburg. The reason for that is spend one full day exploring Quedlinburg is enough. And then I recommend that you take a day trip to Goslar. So Goslar is another small town, medieval town, just like Quedlinburg, that is very close to Quedlinburg. And it too dates back to 1,000 years. It sits on the edge of the Harz Mountains. It's double in size in terms of Quedlinburg. It's about 50,000 people. But its old town and its palace has been named as a UNESCO site as well.
Okay.
When you look at Goslar and what makes it unique, it's probably the legacy that they have as being one of the major mining towns during the Middle Ages. So at its peak, it was home to numerous silver mines, and it was a very important center for trade and for commerce. And so that wealth that came from that is really can be seen in the architecture of the old town today. And that is your typical half-timbered houses, not as many as Quedlinburg, but still some very picturesque half-timbered houses and some grand churches that would be worth looking at. But I want to talk about the Imperial Palace, because the Imperial Palace, along with the Old Town, is what probably the reason why it was deemed the UNESCO site. So the Imperial Palace is called the Kaiserplatz, and it sits on top of a hill. It overlooks Goslar. And it was the residence that was built by King Henry I, who then was renovated by King Henry II. And it was the residence for any of the German emperors who came to visit the region. So this is a very large, impressive castle. And just like any castles in Europe, you walk through it and it gives you a sense of what life would have been like all those centuries ago. But one of the highlights, I think, in terms of visiting this castle would be the paintings that you see on the walls. And those are quite impressive from the perspective of that they depict what the castle would or the palace would have been like in the 10th, 11th and onward. And it would also show you what life would be like in terms of the countryside of Goslar and its surroundings. So it's definitely a palace worth seeing, and it's just on the edge of Goslar. Another site that travelers might be interested in, and that is, again, a little bit on the outside of the town limits, but is one of the mines. So one of the mines that is available for tour is called Rammelsburg. And Rammelsburg is a mine that has been operational for 1,000 years. And it only closed in 1988. The history that this mine played is quite extraordinary. You can go on a guided tour and we'll learn about the history. You can see how that kind of technology has changed over the centuries. And the guides really talk about what life would be like through the centuries as being a miner in those kind of harsh conditions and how dangerous that profession would have been in terms of the safety measures and the cost to their lives. But you can imagine before safety measures were in place. So those are two standout unique things about Goslar. And again, the old town is very similar to Quedlinburg in terms of, you know, charming streets and what you might want to expect to find there.
And I'm seeing pictures of a train, a miner's train.
Yeah.
So I'm getting on a miner's train as part of the tour?
Yeah, so there is a separate train, actually. That's great that you call that out, Chris. So you can take a train as part of the tour for the mines, but then there's also a train that goes through the Harz Mountains.
Okay.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
And that, I believe, is a couple of hours in terms of that scenic train ride that is just outside of Goslar.
And that's the Harts Railway?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Excellent. Anything else on Goslar before we move on here?
Just before we move on and leave to our next destination, a couple of recommendations on where to stay in Quedlinburg. There is one hotel called the Romantic Hotel, and this is just a lovely hotel. It has one of Quedlinburg's Michelin star restaurant. So this is for that luxury traveler who loves fine dining to know that you have that access to that restaurant. But it also is very scenic because it's just on the edge of Quedlinburg. Okay. If you wanted to be in town, the other recommendation would be the Wyndham Garden Quedlinburg. And that is in the old town in a former castle. And so it's one of the kind of charming hotels that would be in Quedlinburg that actually offers great wine collection. You can go there for lunch and they talk about their vaulted wine cellar. If there are any foodies, you'll be well taken care of in Quedlinburg with a Michelin star restaurant and then going to the wine cellar in that one hotel there.
Okay.
So next up, we're going to get back in the car and we're going to go to Hamburg. So Hamburg is just one of the coolest German cities, I think, I've been to.
But and kind of the opposite of the quaint little half-timbered houses here. No.
You're right. You're right. And that's what makes a great road trip, where you break up big city, different architectural styles that you would find in Hamburg, and then you have a little bit of quaintness in terms of Goslar and Quedlinburg. But Hamburg, I know you've done a past episode on that, so I won't.
Been a while.
Okay, I won't talk about it too much. But from Hamburg, the reason why it's a UNESCO site is because of its warehouse district. And that's from the role that it played in the trade in the 18th, 19th century. It's, you know, it's a pretty spectacular site to be able to see. And I think everyone has probably seen that quintessential photo of Hamburg where you see the red brick buildings towering one another, creating this canal where the ships would come in and unload whatever they are.
Their wares, their goods.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. But Hamburg is a city that's a whole bunch of everything. It looks a little bit like Venice in terms of the canals and seeing some of the buildings right up against the water. It reminded me also of Amsterdam, where you see those canals and you see the red brick buildings right up against the water. It's got a little bit of old charm in terms of the old town. It's been completely renovated and there's lots of very posh luxury places that are there for in terms of restaurants and shopping and dining and hotels. The Fairmont being one of them, which is right on the lake there in the city center. And then it's got the UNESCO site, that heritage site in terms of that district, and to be able to go through and learn about that history and to just walk along all of those areas, which are all on a hanging boardwalk, so to speak, where you can walk from building to building. From Hamburg, you want to spend a couple of days touring that city because it is quite large and there's lots to see there. But you also then want to take a day trip to Lübeck. And Lübeck is very close to Hamburg. It's within an hour you can be there. Lübeck is known for being a UNESCO site because it was the founding city for the Hanseatic League during the medieval times. And for listeners who haven't heard of the Hanse term, it's really just referring to that trade alliance that existed in Northern Europe during the 13th to the 17th centuries. And it's really the start of where trade and economics all started and was formed.
It's the medieval version of Hamburg, since Hamburg is the center of commerce for Germany now.
For
their trade,
Yeah, and it's an interesting story because Lübeck was the founding city and mm-hmm. it lost its power after the 17th century. And that's because that sea trade shifted from the Baltic Sea, and it then went from the Atlantic. And so as soon as that switch happened to the Atlantic, then that kind of power shifted to Hamburg taking over that top spot. So
interesting.
It's interesting to see them, the two cities, and make your home base in Hamburg and be able to see both cities and the role that it played. But Lübeck is most probably famous for having that famous gate as that iconic symbol of Lübeck. Mm-hmm. And so when you come into Lübeck, it's the entrance into the old town, which is that Holsteiner Gate. And that Holsteiner Gate, if listeners haven't seen it before, it was the gate into the city where it was used to collect the tolls of people entering, or traders entering into the city, not people, but traders entering into the city. And it's a red brick with two pointed cylinder towers. And they now ever so charmingly kind of lean in towards each other.
I was going
to
say,
sag to each other.
Not quite straight anymore.
Not straight anymore. But if you were to picture a storybook, what would that look like? What a gate would look like? Mm-hmm. You often see that image. So to be able to see that, it always makes a great photo opportunity for tourists to go to that. And attached to the Holsteiner Gate is where you can go to the museum. And for travelers who want to know more about that role that they played and just about the Hanseatic League's role of the trading at the Baltic Sea and then later into the Atlantic, it has a wonderful museum that's next to that to be able to dive deep into that history. But I think you've had a podcast and a previous episode on Lübeck. So
I made a mention of Lübeck on an episode we did on a cruise of the Baltic.
Oh, okay.
I think is all. So it was okay. Part of a larger podcast.
I see. Okay. Yeah. No, in terms of Lübeck and what that city has to offer is, you know, the old town again, but I'd encourage listeners to get off the main streets in Lübeck. Once you've seen the market square that they have there and the kind of very spectacular city hall. It's very impressive. I think it's considered one of the oldest in Germany. And then the church immediately behind that, the Lübeck Cathedral, you want to explore beyond the main street. And the reason for that is because there are lots of elegant looking homes in Lübeck. And that's because it was so lucrative. There were many wealthy residents that lived during the medieval time. And so lots of merchants' residents were there in terms of the nobility and the upper class. And so it's nice to be able to get off that main street and just go into each of the cities. And what you're looking for are those elegant homes. And they're called partition, I think, is the name of the style. And they're very elaborate in terms of their detail. So you can tell when somebody of nobility lived in that house versus just a plain gabled house that you might see in Lübeck. There's also a couple of churches in Lübeck. So St. Mary's is a brick Gothic style, and brick Gothic is really just that red brown brick that you saw in terms of the architecture. No details. It's very plain looking. Mm-hmm. So moved away from that Gothic Renaissance where there's lots of details on their style of architecture. But St. Mary's is from 13th century, and I believe it's the third largest church in Germany. It just soars over Lübeck. And of course, height meant a lot in the Middle Ages. It meant how wealthy you are and how powerful you were. And so that church was meant to show that it was a very wealthy in terms of its congregation and the power that Lübeck held in terms of the town. Another church that is worth seeing is that Lübeck Cathedral. So I have mentioned that one. That's a 12th century church, and I believe one of the oldest in Germany. And of course, one of the neat things about Lübeck is right across from the city hall, it's also known for its famous marzipan brand. So for those that love marzipan or familiar with that sweet, sweet treat, most often dipped in chocolate, there's the Niederreger, that's the brand of marzipan. And so you can go in to there and It's a great shop where you see everything in their marzipan. They have models of the city. So you see a mini cathedral all done in marzipan, the Hallstatter Gate all done in marzipan. They have a small museum there. You can learn about their history in terms of making marzipan. And then, of course, have a cafe, sit down. And everything on the menu, of course, is marzipan. So it's a great way to try it in different ways than just eating it covered in chocolate.
Excellent. You were saying the third largest church tower. I haven't been able to verify that, but it's the second largest brickwork tower in the world. And I'm looking, and roughly when Lübeck was at its peak, it was probably about the 13th tallest building in the world. And that's behind the Great Pyramids in Egypt and all of those other cathedrals and such. We don't quite realize how significantly tall it was for its time.
For its time, yes. Yeah. All right. So we're going to leave Hamburg and Lübeck, and we are off to our last leg, and that is to Wismar and to Stralsund. And they're uniquely tied as a UNESCO site together, whereas all the other ones have been on their own, and they are one UNESCO site together, although that they are not side by side in terms of close proximity. They're about an hour and a half distance from one another. But
okay,
you're now going to the Baltic Sea. So Wismar is right on the Baltic Sea, and it is a small town, small city. But both Wismar and Stralsund were founded in the 13th century, although there was a settlement there before. Because of the role that it was playing in the trade, it was now founded as a city. Both the old towns are part of that UNESCO site, and they are being protected because of the role that they played in the Hanseatic League. And what makes them different from Hamburg and Lübeck was these towns are both right on the Baltic Sea. So this was a more important role that they had to play because they had to build a fortified wall and gates for people to come into, and sea gates for people to actually access and come into that part of the Baltic Sea. And that wall is still there and can be seen still there. But Wismar, it's got a lot of charm in terms of walking around the promenade where you see the very tall sailing ships lined up on the water. And of course, being on the Baltic Sea, it's a constant, nonstop, strong sea breeze that's blowing in from there. And the amount of seagulls that are soaring above and crying out, it's just, I absolutely loved the kind of atmosphere there. It was very lively and full of life. There was also some boats that were pulled up against the promenade selling what they call backfish sandwiches or Fischbrochen sandwiches. It's just essentially like a white fish and almost white bread on a bun. So nothing too special, but it just added to the charm to see the boat lined up and literally just like what you would see at the market, all stacked in ice were the backfish and them preparing it right on site, leaning over the water or the pier and handing it to you. So it was a nice sight to see. It was very lively in terms of live musicians being there. There was someone with a very large bubble wand. And so you walk along the promenade and the pier there and bubbles are always kind of floating through the air. It was just very atmospheric place to be in Wismar. But Wismar, then when you go into the old town, just like the other old towns that you see, there's going to be a couple of the churches, main market square with all the architecture around it. And I'm not sure, Chris, if you do have a previous episode about Wismar.
No, I don't.
You don't? Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. What Wismar, then the market square, is something that you want to go through and go see. And to be able to take stock of all the different architectural styles around the square, the city hall, and there's hotels there. One that I would recommend in terms of staying is called Townhouse Stadt. And it's a very kind of stylish hotel right on that market square with a rooftop terrace. So in terms of location, you can't get better than that in terms of being right in the center of the action. But it's very similar to Stralsund. Just going over to Stralsund, again, It's about an hour, hour and a half from Wismar. Same situation of being founded in the 13th century. And Stralsund actually was part of Sweden during the 17th, 19th century. So it has a little bit of the Swedish roots. When you go to the old town on the Marketplatz, you can see, I guess it would have been the commander for the Swedish Navy there, that house, and seeing the Swedish flag flying above it. So it has a little bit of nods to Sweden throughout the town. But much of Stralsund is that brick Gothic architecture. And that, again, is that reddish brown, very plain architecture that you would see very much Lübeck is. And there's a harbor just like at Wismar, and the former shipping warehouses or containers that were there, they're now since have been converted into restaurants and cafes. So people who love seafood, it's a great spot to go and enjoy some local fresh caught seafood. And right beside the harbor, which is probably a great activity for families, is an ocean aquarium. So that's a great activity for those that love the sea, fish, and want to see that ocean aquarium. But let's head to the Old Town. The Old Town is probably where you want to start after you've looked at the harbor. And that is in that main public square. And what makes Stralsund a little bit different than Wismar is it's a very large square, and its city hall is very large as well in that brick Gothic style. And it has a long arcade, which they would have used in medieval times, just like in Lübeck, where it would have been the marketplace. So it's very much how you would have seen it in medieval times. The city hall, also you can tour it and go down to one of the Gothic cellars, the cellar vaults there for a tour. But what's interesting about this marketplace is that each of the buildings are from different periods and they feature different architectural styles. And that's a little bit different, a little bit unique, because when you go to some markets, the kind of public marketplaces, they're all similar architectural styles. And here it's a little bit different. So it makes you kind of pause and look at each of the different styles, seeing the different periods. And again, there's that one that you want to geek out, which is the where that Swedish commanders would have their headquarters. And you can notice the Swedish flag flying above. So once you've had a chance to look at the public square, then you want to explore beyond that. And right behind the market square, there's St. Nicholas Church. And that's a 13th century church where you can see the steeple peeking out beyond the city hall. And it's another city, just like Lübeck, where you want to get off the main streets and just start exploring and looking for those elegant homes. Again, it was very much for the upper class, the aristocracy who were part of the trading and made their money through trading. So you can see their homes there. Once you're done exploring the old town, a nice part of Stralsund is taking a walk through what they call a Frankenreich. And it's a chain of lakes with a pretty park. And so it's just a nice kind of tranquil place to kind of just go for a stroll and go and just kind of go through as you make your way to St. Mary's Church. And St. Mary's Church is probably a church that travelers would like to seek out. And that is a 14th century church. Again, in that brick Gothic style of architecture. And it's got a tower on top that you can go climb up for those views of the city. Once you've taken a look at the St. Mary's Church and the tower there, you want to continue along that street, which is Frankenstrasse. And so you can take a look at more of the architecture there. And along there, I just want to call out one of the little hidden gems that I had found, and that is a little charming laneway that you'll find, and it's called Baderstupastrasse. And Baderstupastrasse, if you were to translate that to English, bad is bath, and stupor is just like a small room or a small place. And so these would be little small bathhouses that would have been in the 18th century. And they're just small houses all in a row, very colorful, and just make you stop and look. The doorways or the door frames, very short in stature. You know, it would be one of those ones that you feel like you need to duck your head and go inside. But it is a little bit of a charming laneway to see as you're going through the old town and making your way back to that public square there.
Excellent. I feel like we're winding down here.
We are winding down. So we are now done. So that was our ninth UNESCO destination site, and we are back to Berlin. So from Wismar to Berlin, it's about 2.5 hours directly south. And that's, you have it. That's 9 UNESCO designated cities that I would say should probably be about a week and a half to a maximum 2-week trip. So probably not something you could do within 1 week, but if you had 10 days, that's a nice circuit of starting and ending in Berlin and making your way through those other UNESCO sites.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, anything else we need to know before we take on this road trip?
Well, I think it would be great to know that you could take train travel. Mm-hmm. If there are travelers out there who don't want to rent a car and drive to all these places, certainly you can do the train from Berlin to Potsdam, train to Wittenberg, easy. You could do a train to Quedlinburg. The train from Quedlinburg to Goslar, it's a little complicated. Going from Quedlinburg to Hamburg, not too bad, but you couldn't do the train easily to get over to Wismar and Stralsund and then back to Berlin. There is an opportunity, I think, to, if people wanted to look at it, you could adopt your itinerary to be more train focused, but certainly it makes for a fun road trip. And it's always nice driving on the German roads. I've done other road trips in Germany, and it's easy in terms of, and efficient in terms of, the roadways and navigation. It's a great way to see that central Germany and to the north.
Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot along this road trip. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would say Quedlinburg was a surprise to me. It was a pleasant surprise to me. And it's a town that I don't believe people have heard too much about. And it's very unique in terms of the 1300 plus half timbered houses.
Right.
That would be a standout for me in terms of the prettiest spot.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only on a German road trip.
We have unfortunately come home and gotten a speeding ticket for being 5 kilometers over the posted limit.
Wow.
So only in Germany would you get a speed ticket when you're only 5 kilometers over the posted limit. But they, you know, obviously that's a tip you have to abide by, because there's photo radar everywhere. And
this is Germany and there are rules and we will follow them.
Yes. But so that's the funny moment that sticks out in my mind.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize this trip in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one. Diverse, history, and beauty. And I say diverse because you had mentioned we're going from quintessential little village to Hamburg, which is a kind of
industrial
powerhouse. And then you're going to the Baltic Sea, which is very relaxed and laid back, and see that kind of maritime harbor type of atmosphere. So diverse from that perspective of that you're seeing different things, which makes a road trip very interesting. You're not seeing the same thing over and over again.
Excellent.
And that one's the easy one. And I think from it being beautiful, because there's so much different beauty in different sites. And obviously you can say there's lots of beauty in a small town and being charming, but there's also lots of beauty in going to the museums in Berlin and being surrounded by so much of that, and as well as Potsdam, and seeing those royal palaces, which are just very, it's hard to describe the opulence that royalty would be living in.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Renee Hannes from dreamplanexperience.com. You also have another website, which we didn't mention, which is dreamretreatseurope.com. What is that one about?
That's a brand new business, Chris, just launched last week. And that is, I am a co-owner with a partner, and we are hosting luxury retreats in Europe. And they are meant for people to slow down and appreciate the kind of authentic side of Europe. And that's through immersive experiences of connecting with locals in terms of cooking classes and winery tours and things that make it unique to that destination that we are in. So our first retreat is in Tuscany in September 2024.
So you're not yet renting out the Sanssouci Palace for these retreats?
No, but we are renting out an 18th century Tuscan villa that is pretty spectacular. Yes, so we are looking forward to hosting those like-minded travelers who love the finer things in life and want to experience and slow down and appreciate those experiences that are near and dear to the Tuscans.
Excellent. And Renee, if we wanted to send people to your best post at dreamplanexperience.com on a road trip like this, where are we going to send them to?
A road trip like this.
Or this road trip. I wasn't sure if you had the post.
So I will refer your listeners to take a road trip in Germany to these 9 UNESCO city gems, which will be on my website under the category of Germany.
Excellent. And you'll send me that link and we'll put it in the show notes, right?
That sounds great.
Excellent. Renee, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Germany and for a good road trip in Germany.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and share this with travelers. And I really hope that it's inspired them to do this road trip.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show or learning what that entails, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. For those of you who have been listening to the show for a long time, for about 18 and a half years, I've been doing a version of the show one way or another that had photos and chapters and links. And the last episode that wasn't a repeat was the last episode of that format. And I thought I would just stop here and explain what happened and why it's gone away. The big thing that's happened is that very few of you, a small percentage, could even see the chapters, and that percentage was decreasing as there were changes in podcast players. And also, I just needed to carve out some time in my week. I don't know if it was related to the loss of my parents recently, or it was related to talking to other podcasters like Gary Arndt at the International Media Marketplace show about how we were getting out of shape and we're getting podcasters' gut because we weren't exercising enough, but I just needed to carve out a few more hours in my week. And with a full-time job, the only hours I could think to carve out were those chapters that my wife has been trying to get me to stop for some time. They also cost me probably putting those in, not just the time to do them, but the opportunity cost for some advertising, probably $500, $1,000 a month. And so it was time to get rid of that aspect of the show. I hope that doesn't change whether you like the show and find it useful, but I did want to tell you why it changed. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.